Welcome to the Lavo Show podcast. Conversations with outstanding human beings whose love has been inspired and transformed by Osho. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Hello and thanks for tuning in and being here. My name is Waram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Lani. Lani is a meditator and mandala teacher, Watsu therapist, and was appointed by Osho to be his world ambassador. I'm so excited to have Lani on the show and I hope you enjoy it. Lani, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you, Swaram. I'm very good. Thank you for having me.
To start, tell us a little bit about you and your story before meeting Osho.
Well, I was born in North Carolina. I come from a Jewish family. My father was a very successful businessman, so I used to work in my dad's stores as a teenager. And my mother, on the other hand, was very spiritual and an artist. So I used to do yoga, Silva mind control, and many different things other than the business world. And we had an Israeli youth director in our synagogue. So I came to Israel the first time when I was about 16 years old. And I went off to university and I was bored out of my mind. I'm not a book learner. I love to learn from life. So I decided to take a break from university and came back to Israel and ended up going back and finishing university, came back again to Israel. And as I was visiting my family for a wedding, I was visiting my aunt and my brother who were already disciples of Osho for many years. And they were living communally with about 25 sannyasins in Beverly Hills. And they kept talking about this ranch, Rajneeshpuram. And I was so fascinated by these people, I decided I wanted to go visit the ranch. So I went to visit back in the summer of 83. And I was so blown away by the quality of the people there. I had never read any of Osho's books. And I was so turned on by what was happening there. I came back to Israel, packed up everything, and went back to America. And I ended up going to Rajneeshpuram in the fall of 83 with my mother. And, you know, for me, it's been a family affair with Osho. I have my mother, and out of five of us, four of us are sannyasins.
When you arrived in Oregon in 83, did you have a chance to meet Osho personally?
I did not meet him on the ranch. He was in silence when I arrived, and he started speaking maybe a year after I got there. But I did meet him one time personally when I was in Pune too.
And tell us about that meeting.
Wow. Well, I, you know, I don't know if you you remember, of course you probably know, we had to leave Pune every 6 months to get a new visa. And my first visa turnaround, I ended up going to Nepal. And when I came back, Greek Amrito was doing a press conference in Greece. So I went to travel with her to Greece. And every time I went somewhere, I was sharing with Hasia. I was quite close with Hasia. I came back and I was asked if I want to go to Russia. There was a book fair in Moscow in 87, so I went with a group of four people, and we brought all of Osho's books. It was the first time bringing Osho's books to the Soviet Union. They were banned for all of that time, and I was there for 10 days, and it was the most thrilling time of my life. All the people, the sannyasins were underground, and they had never seen his books before, so they were whispering to us, "I'm a sannyasin," and of course, I was telling Hasia stories while I was there. And when I got back to Pune, Osho's secretary Anando had asked me if I want to get involved with Osho's books. And the funny thing is, I don't like to read, but I did get involved with the team looking where to publish Osho's books. So we ended up going to Korea, and we found 32 of Osho's books already published in Korean. And when I got back to Pune, one evening after the discourse, Nirvana was looking out into the crowd and she was pointing at me and she said, "Osho wants to see you." I said, "No." And this was already 4 years after I had taken sannyas. So I walked, my heart literally leaped into my throat and I walked into his room with Asya. And when I sat in front of him, I sat on the floor And he had a conversation with me asking me if I knew any Koreans that could translate his Hindi discourses. And he then said to me, "You will now be my world ambassador." And I said, "No." and he said, "Yes." And then he asked me to go to Delhi and make a beautiful bookstall for his books and a book fair in Delhi. So all of a sudden, I thought it was books. So the day after, I asked him a question. I said, "You know, the world is a big place. I don't know how to prioritize where to go." I asked him if I should go to China, if I should go to Yugoslavia, which existed at the time. He said, "No need. Wherever your energy is, wherever the energy is needed, you follow your energy." So that was how it all got started.
Wow, that's incredible. So your first meeting with Osho is when he appointed you to be his world ambassador.
Yes.
So what does it mean to be Osho world ambassador?
You know, Swaram, it's been a koan for me as well. I asked if I should start embassies around the world, and he said to me, "No need. Wherever your suitcase is an embassy." And for me, it's been a honor to just live his teachings and share. I've never been given directions what to do. He always told me to follow my energy. So I started traveling and doing book fairs. I traveled with Hasia to some of the communes in Europe and Japan. And I went to Rio to the Global Summit in 92. And when I got to Sedona, I lived in Sedona for many years, I actually called my house Osho Embassy. So today I get invitations to facilitate meditations. And it's just a joy for me to share.
What changed in being an Osho ambassador during Osho's time when he was in the body and today? Do you still feel today that you are Osho ambassador?
Absolutely, absolutely. Because for me, Osho is still alive in his people. His body's not here anymore, but his vision and his people are catching on like wildfire. I remember listening to a discourse in the early days when I first came, how one candle can set a whole forest afire. So it's, I feel he's very alive today.
Just recently, I heard Osho in a discourse saying, "I don't give you teachings, I give you myself." Sounds like what you're saying is that Osho energy lives through his people. Is that how you feel?
Absolutely. I don't know if you heard this. He said once before, someone asked him if he would have a successor, and he said there would be no need to save any nook and corner for him because he would be dissolved in his people. "Just as you can taste the sea and it is salty, when you meet my people, you'll have the taste of Bhagwan." I don't know if he said that way back when. I don't remember. But that's why I love being with his people everywhere, because everyone has a different flavor.
That's one of the beautiful things about Osho, that he was so multidimensional and he was encouraging people with so many different talents to develop those talents and go around the world and spread whatever they understood to help develop their consciousness. And how someone today who is interested in spreading Osho or making Osho available more than spreading, because there's no missionary kind of things here. What's the way for us who want to make Osho available today? Do you think books are still valuable, or?
I think first of all, his meditation. You know, the meditation centers make his meditations available on a daily basis. Sometimes, you know, if they're big centers, then the books, and then the work that Osho International is doing is phenomenal, making the discourses, the audios and videos available on YouTube. Just going to osho.com, it's an incredible resource for people to get to know about Osho. And so I feel, first of all, the meditations, the books, the audio talks, the video talks, reading, getting to know his people, the quality that we're living. A lot of people get introduced through the people, the sannyasins, and they want to know, what is it that you are doing? Because I'll give you an example. I swim every day, and, you know, people come up to me and ask me what I do. I don't have a typical profession where I go to an office from 9 to 5. So I share with people that I offer meditations in my home, and they say, can I come and try? I said, absolutely. So they say to me, there's something about you. There's something different about you. So I feel that we, as his people, are carrying a fragrance, and people smell it, they taste it, and they want to know what it is.
I love this. It's a wonderful. And we were in London for many years and we were offering meditations, and we got so many friends coming, and some of them were already interested in Osho and they maybe read Osho books, but some were new and they were just interested in meditation and they got to know Osho, and so many of them took sannyas eventually. That's how Osho works. You know, it's the energy that just happens during these events and meditation.
I think all in all, when I look back, today meditation is more known and common. You know, back then it was not such a common thing to go sit and meditate or to bring meditation, the quality of meditation, into one's life. Today meditation is like the word Coca-Cola. So everybody wants to know about how to bring more relaxation and more silence into their lives.
And what I see is mainly the traditional techniques and mindfulness is becoming mainstream, whereas active meditation or Osho active meditation are still not very known to the mainstream. We feel responsible that, you know, we want to play a part in this and make Osho techniques known because they are much more effective.
Yes.
So you mentioned before that you grew up in Carolina, mm-hmm. which is the place where Osho was arrested. With the release of Wild Wild Country, this docuseries on Netflix, which kind of went viral and attracted lots of media attention. You were there during those days. What's your take on Wild Wild Country?
Well, it was not easy for me to watch it in the beginning. I arrived in the summer of 83 and I left in the fall of 85. So, and I was very involved on a day-to-day basis in my work. So I never had any interaction with the neighbors. And so when I saw, I thought the way they did the documentary was incredible, how they showed both sides and how they brought the past and the present interviewing everyone. And it was a lot to digest. I'm not sure if America was ready for such an experiment. And at the same time, I feel the documentary has created so much interest in Osho. I think more and more people are buying his books, and it's created quite a stir here in Israel. There have been quite a few news stories. People are talking about it. And I feel Osho's probably having a giggle that he's back in the news again, because he loved news, whether it was good or bad. So it's bringing a lot of attention where people are inquiring, who is this man? What is his teaching all about?
Yeah, definitely. I agree with you. I agree. Once you hear Osho or you read a book, if you are open, you have an opportunity to change your life. So if that happens because of Wild Wild Country, welcome. That's amazing. You mentioned at some point that you lived in Sedona. And in my early days as a sannyasin, I remember being very fascinated and intrigued by the mystery school. To these days, I never really fully grasped what was happening there. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Well, my aunt, Kavisha, was the director of the school. That's how I came to Osho, through my aunt. And so I had a personal connection with her, and I was involved in the mystery school as well as running the Welcome Center in Pune. And for me, one of Kavisha's gifts, she had an understanding of the heights of Osho's wisdom and playfully brought it down to earth. So she created groups called the Stream to start understanding Osho's transmissions, if you will. And we created laboratories of life in the school to start living his teachings rather than just reading about them. So in Sedona, we had many businesses where we brought our meditation into our businesses. So, for example, we had a restaurant, we had a gift store, we had a health food store, a flower shop, graphic artist, what do you call it, graphics department. And we had many opportunities to ground and live the transmissions of the master. So we were meditating every day together. We had dynamic and kundalini and the evening meeting. So we meditated as a community every day together. We had we celebrated the festivals. And, you know, one of the transmissions, one of the biggest transmissions that we were living was creating a meritocracy where, I don't know if you've heard this term before, where people were living their merit. So I think one of the things that I appreciated so much about Kavisha is that she had a merit of flowering people's merits.
Many times Osho spoke about meritocracy. How did you implement this meritocracy system in Sedona?
Well, we had a restaurant, and the cooks, we had a group of people that were amazing cooks. They ran the kitchen. Then we had graphics. For example, my brother was taking care of the graphics until we had an amazing graphic designer come to join the community. So whenever somebody would show up that had the merit that would make, so to speak, our garden richer, that's how it unfolded.
And in terms of meditation and offerings, was there anything kind of different that you did there compared to other places?
I do know that when we got there, there were rumors around the community that these are the people coming from Oregon. So they were quite cautious in working with even renting houses to us or selling houses to us when we started businesses. But they came, then there was another rumor, these are the good people from Oregon. So we were very, I think one of the lessons that was learned from the time on the ranch in Rajneeshpuram was to respect our neighbors. And we were very careful about doing what we said we were going to do and being on time. And we got a reputation that people wanted to do business with us. Our restaurant became very popular. People would drive for 2 hours from Phoenix to come to our restaurant. We had a vegetarian restaurant, and people would make comments that the bathrooms were so clean. So we literally brought a lot of Osho's teachings into daily life. You know, cleanliness was next to godliness at all the communities, all the Buddha fields that I lived in. And this is what we lived. One of the other things that was offered for in Osho Academy, one of the foundations is a group called Osho Psychology of the Buddhas, which is one of Osho's main teachings as to disidentify from the mind. So Kavisha came up with a very creative way to physically see that we're not the mind. So she had a technique, it was a 5-day group, and people came from all over the world to do this group. So it was to have an experience of disidentification. We often created laboratories to experiment. I remember one of the experiments was for the women to, for 1 week, not tell the men what to do. So the women had to almost like put tape over their mouths to let the men make decisions without telling them what to do and see what would happen.
Is there anyone that is carry on this pioneering work that you started in Sedona?
Well, I left Sedona back in 2006. Kavisha left her body back in 98, and I stayed on for a few more years. And I had this feeling, you know, I don't know if you know the discourse. One of my favorite Osho discourses is Moju, the man with the inexplicable life. Have you heard of this discourse?
No, actually not.
It's from the Wisdom of the Sands, Volume 2, and it's the first discourse. I highly recommend that you listen to it. But one of the things that I love about it, it's a Sufi story about a man who hears his inner voice, Kidir, and he keeps getting these messages. And I often feel like my life is like Mojud. I keep getting these voices, it's time to go. And I don't know why, I just listen. So it was time for me to leave Sedona. And I started traveling, and I was a gypsy for quite a few years, trying to feel where my next garden to grow. So I went to Pune for a visit. I went to Thailand, to Italy, and I came back to Israel for a visit. And it was at that time when I had such a pull that it was time for me to come back here. So I left in 2006, and I would often go back to Sedona and visit. And I heard that Yogi and Abir Bava, who were the founders and co-directors with Kavisha and David, have gone to Santa Barbara. So I'm not in touch with them today, but I heard that they are still running Osho Academy in Santa Barbara, California. And there's still a lot of people that were part of Osho Academy still living in Sedona today. Okay. And I heard they're meditating together, and many still have their businesses there.
Wonderful. You mentioned that you came back and now you're settled in Israel. I know that Israel is really active when it comes to Osho. Osho is very popular in Israel. There are lots of festivals. There are lots of things going on, lots of sannyasins. Why do you think Osho is doing so well in Israel? And give us an overview of what's happening in terms of Osho in Israel.
Well, I know that a lot of Israelis, when they finish their army service, travel around the world. And many Israelis go to India and South America. And I feel that meditation is needed more than ever in this country because it's such a fast-paced life. And, you know, the fact that they have war in their face, it's not at peace with two of their neighbors. They are really thirsty for silence and relaxation. The Zorba is well and alive here in this country, and I feel the attraction to bringing a relaxed quality with this aliveness is what Israelis are attracted to. And, you know, Israelis, what I love about Israelis, they travel abroad and they always bring everything that they discover abroad, they want to bring back home to Israel. So many Israelis want to bring that Osho experience back here. A few Israelis started a place called the Ashram in the desert. And I'm part of a team right now involved in grounding the Osho Tel Aviv Meditation Center. We want to have a place where people can come and meditate in the city on a daily basis. And we're looking for a location right now near a train station so it'll be easy for people from around the country to join. You know, Israel's a very small country. It's about the size of New Jersey. It's and Tel Aviv is the center of it all.
Well, that's great. You know, so basically you are saying you're opening an Osho center in Tel Aviv.
Yes, yes.
Wonderful. Look forward to visiting you there.
And also, Swaram, we have a festival every summer, the Osho Festival. About 1,500 people gather every summer. And the meditations are available, there are workshops, we have the evening meeting, and it's usually Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And this summer, there's a theme, and this summer they're riding on the wave of the wild, wild country, and the theme this summer is the essence. Maybe you'll come one summer for enjoying a festival in the summertime.
Why not? I mean, 1,500 people is a huge number, you know, considering the size of Israel, as you mentioned before. It's pretty impressive.
Kora loves creating festivals. He does a Sufi festival, a yoga festival, a bodyways festival. But this year, it's the 11th Osho Festival.
Oh, that's amazing. In terms of you and your involvement with Osho, so what are your projects at the moment, both on the Osho meditation side and then if you have anything else going on?
Well, I have meditation once a week in my home. I like to offer meditation retreat days. And in the future, I would love to do a meditation retreat weekend. I'm working with a friend of mine. We're going to take a group of women to the Sinai Desert for a meditation retreat. And the desert is very special, the Sinai Desert. It's the mountains and the sea and the desert together. So there's an amazing emptiness and a place where people can really connect with themselves. So it's going to be a multidimensional, healthy experience to have fun together in the desert. So I'm working on that. And also, I have a beautiful meditation chair that one of my past lovers when I was living in Sedona created. It's a meditation chair for the modern meditator. It's made out of wood and it's upholstered and it comes in three pieces and it's got a U-shaped bottom and it's on a cradle so you can sit straight or recline. So I have all the plans for it. I'm just looking for the right partner to produce them and make them available so more people can be comfortable in meditation.
Wow, lots going on. Sounds like you have, full of energy, lots of ideas, lots of activities. Amazing.
Yes.
And then I believe you also teach mandala, so we haven't touched that point. Would you like to say anything about that?
Well, for me, mandala painting is meditative drawing, and it uses both sides of the brain. I love teaching people how to use the compass and the ruler to make their own patterns. You know, a lot of people buy these adult coloring books, I call them. And part of the fun for me is drawing the pattern on a piece of paper and using the male side of the mind and being precise and then playing with the color and letting things flow and be creative. So I love to teach people how to paint mandalas, and I love challenges. For example, when I was in Ecuador, I was with Anubhuta and Anasha. Their neighbors asked me if we could paint a mandala on the floor of their yurt. So we made a mandala 15 feet in diameter, and we had about 20 people painting it. And I did a mandala recently on the earth using lentils and rice and all kinds of legumes. So just I love involving a group of people to create together.
Wow, that sounds really interesting, amazing. So maybe we can come up with some ideas for a mandala in Singapore.
I would love to come. How I roll in life, Swaram, I usually respond to invitations. Like, for example, I was invited to a retreat here in Israel called the Red Tent Retreat. It's a retreat for women. And they wanted someone to facilitate Osho meditations in their retreat. So they found me, and I've been involved with them now for a year and a half. And they're a beautiful group of women. That's one thing I'm involved with. And then there's another thing. There are juice cleanses. Often I've been involved and been on the staff helping in the kitchen. So I love to do a little bit of everything.
I can feel that you're very energetic, so I'm sure, you know, you need to express your creativity and energy, and it's amazing that you get involved in so many different things. So where people can find you if they want to know a little bit more about you and perhaps get in touch and invite you for mandala paintings or leading meditation or juice cleanse and everything else?
I have a Facebook page, a personal page, Lani Levine, and I also have Manda Lani.
Okay, so I'm going to link your Facebook pages in the show notes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so we are heading towards the end of the interview, and I've got three final questions for you. The first one is, what's your morning routine? How does your morning look like in the first couple of hours?
Okay, well, I wake up between 6 and 7 in the morning. I don't use an alarm clock. I wake up when my body wakes up. And I usually hang out in the bed and just feel my heart and feel my belly and just connect. And then I review the day, what's in front of me. I don't have a regular routine on a daily basis. So I just think, okay, what am I doing today? Then I get up and brushing my teeth is an amazing meditation for me. I have one of these electric toothbrushes, and I like to really see if I can be present with each one of the quadrants before it beeps. Then I do a face mask. I love taking care of my body temple. And then I make beauty and order in my home. And I like to put smells on. I love burning incense and put on music. And I usually start the day with a smoothie. I listen to a few of the other podcasts where everybody's making their coffee or their espresso. I'm not a coffee drinker. So smoothies are my way of starting the day. Okay. And often when I feel like it, I love to do the Osho Divine Healing exercises.
Beautiful. But to be fair, I'm more intrigued about the toothbrushing meditation. You may want to start a group on that or something. Okay, so the second question is, what's your favorite meditation and why?
One of my favorite Osho meditations is listening from the heart, Kundalini and Nada Brahma. And I love sharing the listening from the heart. It's from the Book of Secrets.
I don't know that meditation, actually. It's from the Book of Secrets.
Beautiful. It's a meditation where you imagine yourself without a head, and you let your ears be joined to your heart, and you allow your heart to absorb sound. It's a beautiful way. You know, the evening meeting has often been introduced as the art of listening. So the listening is helping one to be more present. And why I like this meditation so much, Swaram, is that the heart, the heart center, not the pumping heart, has the qualities of non-judgment, unconditional love, and acceptance. So for me, it's the foundation of all meditation to start with the heart. So if I can water those qualities, it makes it easier to watch and be present in all activities in daily life. So I often, I lead this meditation every time I offer a meditation in my home. I start the evening with the listening from the heart, and I encourage them to take it into their daily life. And I have a principal of an elementary school who has shared with me that it has really changed how he works with the kids and the teachers. So for me, this is about bringing meditation into life and transformation.
Very, very interesting. And I'd love to do the meditation with you, because in my experience, whoever is leading the meditation, if the person who is leading really loves the technique and has experienced the technique, then is a different quality. So, I'm not just interested in trying the meditation, but it'd be great to do it with you one day. So when we meet, maybe when you come.
It really has. I really feel that I can sit with people and really be present while they're talking, even when it's difficult to listen to them. And, you know, yes, I lose my meditation once in a while when somebody gets angry at me or confronts me. But I find it's much easier for me to be when I'm listening from my heart.
Beautiful. Okay, so the last question is, you leave the Osho experiment. You are one of the pioneers in this movement of creating a new man, Dzogchen the Buddha. What does it mean to you personally to be with Osho today in 2018?
Well, for me, it's living Dzogchen the Buddha. How do I bring this quality of relaxed awareness in everything I do? You know, it's funny. When I first, when I was 18 years old, I went shopping, went for a trip with my dad to New York, and I found a necklace, Live, Love, Laugh. And this was before I came to Osho. And I came to know later that that was one of Osho's slogans. So for me, it's all about being loving, being creative, singing and dancing and being alive and being non-judgmental, radiating love and radiating light, meditating with friends, sharing meditations. And I love being with Osho's people because it's a reminder to be all of that.
And I can certainly say that looking at your picture and talking to you and hearing your voice, you radiate light and you radiate positive vibes and positive energy. And it's been a real, real pleasure talking to you. And I'm sure that all the listeners will get your radiating positive vibes as well through the podcast. So that's the end. And I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for your time and for sharing beautiful stories with us today.
Thank you. I really enjoyed.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Love Osho podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, you can show your appreciation by leaving a review on iTunes. Visit loveosho.com for new episodes, blogs, and much more.